Would the House please come to order? Would the members please indicate their presence by voting? Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
30 members present.
We do have a quorum present to conduct business. Our chaplain this morning is the Pastor David Horn of Faith Lutheran Church. Would the members please rise?
Thank you. Madam Speaker, a word of explanation about our prayer this morning. It's taken from the Lutheran Book of Prayer, a book commonly used in my denomination, but words to this effect are used every day by many people throughout the state, certainly, and the nation. We have ample opportunity to hear things said about us from time to time. Some of them are happy, some of them not so. I hope it's an encouragement to you today to hear words that are prayed daily in many places in your behalf. So let us pray. Heavenly Father, as a citizen of our commonwealth, I intercede with you for our representatives in government. You have established in our midst lawmaking powers dedicated to the upholding of order and liberty. I beseech you, bless and preserve our form of government in state and nation. Grant that our legislators may ever be mindful of the welfare of all their constituents. Grant that they be guided to serve unselfishly the common good of the people. Preserve them from all double dealing and pettiness and self-seeking. Protect, I beseech you, those liberties of rule by representation, which are the cornerstone of our government. And teach us Christians the grace to use our freedom to proclaim your word and use each and every opportunity to serve our fellow men. May we give proof of our gratitude in seeking the welfare of our state and using our privileges of ballot and freedom of press and speech for the improvement of our own community and our entire nation. These blessings grant us, dear Lord, for Jesus' sake. Amen. Amen.
Thank you, Pastor Horn. Representative James, would you please lead us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I would ask the unanimous consent that the prayer be spread across the journal.
Without objection, the prayer will be spread across the journal. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. May the journal reflect that Representative Moses has previously been excused from the call of the House today and that Representative Betty Davis is excused from the call of the House today due to illness.
Without objection, Representative Davis will be excused due to illness. Mr. Minority Leader, brief at ease. Would the clerk please certify the journal for the previous legislative day?
I certify as the correctness of the journal for the 36th and 37th legislative days and Senate and House Joint Journal Supplement Number 8.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent the House Journal as certified by the Chief Clerk be approved.
Without objection, the journals will be approved. Will the House please come to order? Do we have guests today for introduction? Representative Robinson.
Hey, you saw me today. I have quite a few guests today that are my constituents, and the first one is in the Taylor Gallery, and he's the son of our pastor, Travis Horn, and he's 11 years old, and he's in homeschooling, and would like to welcome him today. And Madam Speaker, also in the Proudovich Gallery today, I have four constituents who I'm extremely proud of, and today on our citation, we're going to be honoring the Mendenhall River School. And I think, you know, we quite often talk about the problems our kids are having and the problems our schools are having, and this is a perfect example of having a school that has been chosen as a Blue Ribbon School, and only 276 schools across the nation out of our 105,000 schools, and Juneau was one of the areas that was chosen. And they were chosen because of the leadership and also their teaching, their curriculum, their student achievement, and also their parent involvement. So I'd like people to help me welcome. First, it will be Jackie Sparks, who was the former principal of Mendenhall River School, and Diana Gifford, who is the present principal of the school. And then we also have Janice Mason, who is the co-president of the parents group at Mendenhall River School this year, and the past president, Terry Burke. And I appreciate everybody helping me welcome them today.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I have several members of the Alaska Professional Design Council that I would like the body to welcome. They're in the Taylor Gallery, Dwayne Adams, Linda Lyon-Korsgaard, Pat Kachina, Sam Coombs, Robert Gaspard, and Richard Richick. I can't read the name.
Representative Williams.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'm honored to introduce several constituents, all of my bosses from Ketchikan. They made the annual trip to lobby each and every one of you. I think they've made it. I'd like to start off first with the mayors of the community, the mayor from the city of Saxman, Forrest DeWitt in the Taylor Gallery, Mayor Jim Carlton, Mayor Ellery Stanton, and Representative, what's her name? Sherry Davis. Phyllis Yetka, Assembly Member. Mike Harpold, School Board Member. Chris Elliott, School Board Member. Bill Jones, Interim City Manager. Richard Trimble, KPU. Guy Galloway, Saxman City Administrator. And we have someone from the Ketchikan Daily News, Scott Woolen. Please help me welcome them all.
Representative Davis, as a past member of this body, it would be an honor to give you the floor for comments as long as you're not lobbying for money. Thank you. Representative Rice.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I had purposely asked that the good representative from District 10 not be given the full list of people down with the Professional Design Council, because one of them is a gentleman down from Fairbanks who's a friend and constituent. Would you please help me welcome Joe Notkin? And also, down with the executive directors of Head Start is another friend of mine, Eileen Cummings, who is the executive director of the Fairbanks RCPC Head Start program. So please help us welcome her.
Representative Roekberg.
Madam Speaker, I'll take this opportunity to introduce three friends of mine that are in the Peretrovich Gallery. They're here visiting Juneau for the CHAR meetings. First, I'd like to introduce the president of O'Brady's Burger and Brew, allegedly the best hamburger in Alaska, Mr. Maurice McDonald. Next, I'd like to introduce the owner of the Club Paris. Now, there's no question this is the best steak in Alaska, Mr. Charlie Selman. And last, I'd like to introduce a very good friend of mine for 40 years, an Eagle Scout, a former member of the Anchorage City Council and Borough Assembly, pioneer Alaskan, the conqueror of 6 of 7 of the highest peaks in the world and the continents, and he's still trying to get up Everest for about the fourth time, and also the owner of Alaska's most famous cabaret, Mr. Chilku Charlie Mountain Mike Gordon.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. In the Taylor Gallery is a friend of mine and a Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly Member, Larry Hackemiller. If the members would help me welcome him.
Mr. Minority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I have a friend in the Taylor Gallery who's also here for the CHAR meetings that are going on over the next few days. Christy Tang, she owns the Pioneer Bar and Restaurant in Haines.
Representative Martin.
Yes, thank you, Madam Speaker. I'd like to introduce a special guest who I hope next year will be one of our pages. He is the son of the legislative assistant to Mr. Bill Williams, a gentleman from Ketchikan, and his son, Jack Phelps, his father. The son is Jake Phelps, tall one.
Further guests for introduction, Representative Coring.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'd like to introduce three important constituents of mine in the Paranovich Galley. From the Chugiak Children's Services Organization, we have Linda Ketchum, who is the Literacy Coordinator, Marianne Malone, who is the Site Coordinator for the Palmer Head Start, and also Ann Velarde, who is the Treasurer for the Chugiak Children's Services. Please join me in welcoming them, please.
Further guests, Mr. Minority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I see one other constituent came in the Taylor Gallery from Metlakatla, Mr. Paul Young.
Further guests for introduction? If not, this brings us down to messages. Do we have messages from the governor?
Yes, Madam Speaker. On February 20th, we received the following letter. Dear Speaker Phillips, in the spirit of change which our constituents demanded in last fall's election, let's be bold enough to do away with business as usual. With this letter, I invite you to join with me in moving forward in a cooperative manner on confirmations. The legislature's action regarding appointments to boards and commissions taken during a joint session on February 15, 1995, underscores the importance of clarifying the law regarding gubernatorial appointments and the legislature's delegated powers of confirmation. Alaskans are not well served by unnecessary confrontations between the legislative and executive branches of government. This dispute does a disservice to the Alaskans who have volunteered their time on various boards and commissions and cast a legal cloud on actions taken by the quasi-judicial and regulatory bodies involved. Nor is it fair or reasonable to ask these citizens to resolve this dispute in court. As a sitting governor, I have the authority to transmit to the legislature the names of appointments to boards and commissions. This authority exists regardless of actions made by my predecessor in office. I understand that you disagree with this view of the law. However, I am confident that you agree that a final determination by the Alaska Supreme Court would avoid a repeat of this dispute, which invariably occurs during the initial term of every governor. For these reasons, I request your cooperation in immediately bringing before our courts a test of the validity of the confirmations allegedly approved by the legislature. I am told that only through legal action can this matter be resolved with finality. Only in this way can the effective boards and commissions proceed with their work with a minimum of disruption. By clarifying the rules, we all win. Sincerely, Tony Knowles, Governor. I have no further messages from the governor, Madam Speaker.
Messages from the other body?
I have no messages from the other body.
Do we have communications?
We received from the Select Committee on Legislative Ethics the revised open meeting guidelines for the legislature, and they are printed in the House and Senate Supplement Number 9.
I'll be referred to the Rules Committee. Mr. Minority Leader? Brief at ease. Will the House please come back to order? Did we go through all Do you want more? House, please come back to order. Do we have reports of standing committees?
Yes, Madam Speaker. The House Labor and Commerce Committee has considered the qualifications of the following commissioners and recommends that the appointments be forwarded to a joint session for consideration. Commissioner of the Department of Commerce and Economic Development, Willie Hensley, and Commissioner of the Department of Labor, Tom Cashin. The reports were signed by Representative Cott, Chairman, Representatives Porter, Masick, Kabina, Roeckberg, Sanders, and Elton. The Transportation Committee has considered House Concurrent Resolution Number 9, School Bus Driver Appreciation Day, recommends it be replaced with CS for House Concurrent Resolution Number 9, Transportation, with the same title, attaches a zero fiscal note. The report are recommending do pass McLean, Bryce, Sanders, Williams, Masick, James, G. Davis. The report was signed by G. Davis. Chair, HCR 9, has no further referral. The Finance Committee has considered House Bill 4, Permanent Fund Dividend Eligibility, recommends it be replaced with CS for House Bill 4, State Affairs, with the same title, recommending do pass Hanley, Mulder, Martin, Coring, Kelly, Terrio, Navarre, Brown, Grusendorf. No recommendation, Parnell. The report was signed by Hanley, co-chair. HB 4 has no further referral. The Health, Education, and Social Services Committee has considered House Bill 28, Possession of Guns on School Property, recommends it be replaced with CS for House Bill 28, Hess, with a new title, attaches 2-0 fiscal notes, recommending do pass Roeckberg, G. Davis, Bundy, Toohey. No recommendation, Robinson and Bryce. The report was signed by 2E co-chair. HB 28 has a further referral to the Judiciary Committee. The State Affairs Committee has considered House Bill 44, Gaming Proceeds to Fund Charitable Organizations, recommends it be replaced with CS for House Bill 44, State Affairs, with a new title, attaches a fiscal note, recommending DuPass, Porter and Green, Porter, Green, Ogun, and James, no recommendation, Ivan, Robinson, and Willis. The report was signed by James, Chairman. HB 44 has a further referral to the Judiciary Committee. The Transportation Committee has considered House Bill 48, Motorcycle Safety, attaches a fiscal note, 3-0 fiscal notes, recommending DuPass, Bryce, McLean, James, Massick, Williams, Sanders, G. Davis. The report was signed by G. Davis. HB 48 has a further referral to the Judiciary Committee. The Judiciary Committee has considered House Bill 72, Uniform Fraudulent Transfer Act, recommending DuPass, Finkelstein, Porter, Green, Toohey. No recommendation, Deasy. The report was signed by Porter Chairman. HB 72 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Community and Regional Affairs Committee has considered House Bill 80, DNR Approval of Plats in Unorganized Boroughs, recommends it be replaced with CS for House Bill 80, Community and Regional Affairs, with a new title, attaches two fiscal notes, recommending DuPass, VZ, Cott, Ivan, no recommendation, Mackey, Elton, Osterman, and Nikolai. The report was signed by Ivan and Osterman co-chairs. HB 80 has a further referral to the Resources Committee. The State Affairs Committee has considered House Bill 90, Convening Legislature After Governor Election, attaches a zero fiscal note, recommending DuPass, Porter, Green, Ivan, Robinson, Willis, Ogun, and James. The report was signed by James, Chairman. HB 90 has a further referral to the Judiciary Committee. The State Affairs Committee has considered House Bill 127, 120-day jail assault on officers, attaches a fiscal note and 2-0 fiscal notes. The report was signed by Porter, Green, Ivan, or recommending DuPass, Porter, Green, Ivan, Robinson, Willis, Ogun, and James. The report was signed by James, Chairman. HB 127 has a further referral to the Judiciary Committee. The Resources Committee has considered Senate Joint Resolution Number 6, Transfer Federal Land to Post 1802 States, recommending DuPass, Cott, Osterman, Barnes, Ogun, Green, Williams, do not pass, Davies, and Nikolai. The report was signed by Green co-chairman. SJR 6 has no further referral. I have no further standing committee reports, Madam Speaker.
Do we have reports of special committees?
The House Special Committee on Fisheries has considered House Bill 140, Small Fish Processor Surety Bonds, recommends it be replaced with CS for House Bill 140, Fish, with the same title, attaches a zero fiscal note, recommending DuPass, Ogun and Elton, no recommendation, Osterman. The report was signed by Osterman, Chairman. HB 140 has a further referral to the Labor and Commerce Committee. The House Special Committee on International Trade and Tourism has considered House Bill 180, Liquor Licenses for Resort Lodges, attaches a zero fiscal note, recommending DuPass, James and Massick, no recommendation, Cott, Porter, Robinson, Nikolai, and Osterman. The report was signed by Massick, Chairman. HB 180 has a further referral to the Community and Regional Affairs Committee. I have no further standing committee reports, Madam Speaker.
Do we have citations or resolutions for introduction?
Citation commemorating Black History Month, February 1 through the 28th, 1995, by Representative B. Davis. Honoring Service Cougars 1994 State Football Champions, by Representative Green. Honoring North Elementary School Blue Ribbon School of Excellence, by Representative Green. Honoring Teresa Garrison, by Senator Zaroff. Honoring Alaska Native Education First Interior Youth Leadership Conference, by Senator Lincoln and Representative Nikolai. House Concurrent Resolution Number 12, by Representative Massick, relating to management of the salmon fisheries of the Upper Cook Inlet Area.
House Special Committee on Fish and Resources.
I have no further citations or resolutions for introduction.
Do we have bills for introduction?
Sponsor substitute for House Bill 37 by Representative B. Davis, entitled An Act Relating to Silicone Implants and Providing for an Effective Date.
Labor and Commerce, House Committee, and Finance.
House Bill 190 by Representative Mulder, entitled An Act Relating to Civil Liability of Volunteer School Crossing Guards and Providing for an Effective Date.
House Committee and Judiciary.
House Bill 191 by Representative Theriault, entitled An Act Relating to the Management and Disposal of State Land and Resources Relating to Certain Remote Parcel and Homestead Entry Land Purchase Contracts and Providing for an Effective Date.
Resource Committee and Finance.
House Bill 192 by Representative Foster, entitled An Act Relating to Housing Programs of the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, the Corporation Supplemental Housing Development Grants to Regional Housing Authorities and to Housing Programs of Regional Housing Authorities and Permitting Regional Housing Authorities to Make, Originate, and Service Loans for the Purchase and Development of Residential Housing.
Community and Regional Affairs and Finance.
Sponsor substitute for House Bill 64. By Representative Davies, entitled An Act Relating to the Operation of Bicycles on State Highways, Prohibiting Motor Vehicle Operators or Occupants from Harassing Bicycle Operators and Encouraging Safe Use of Bicycles as a Basic Means of Transportation.
Transportation Committee, Judiciary, and Finance.
I have no further bills for introduction, Madam Speaker.
This brings us down to consideration of the daily calendar. Would the clerk please read the first item on today's calendar?
House Bill 39 by Representatives Terrio and B. Davis, entitled An Act Relating to the Authority of Mobile Intensive Care Paramedics, Physician Assistants, and Emergency Medical Technicians to Pronounce Death Under Certain Circumstances. The Health, Education, and Social Services Committee considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with CS for House Bill 39 Hess with the same title. The report was signed by or recommending do pass Roekberg, G. Davis, Bundy, Tui, VZ, Robinson, and Bryce. The report was signed by Tui. Co-chair, a zero fiscal note was attached. The Judiciary Committee considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with CS for House Bill 39 Judiciary with the same title. Attached two zero fiscal notes, recommending do pass VZ Finkelstein, B. Davis, Porter, Green, Bundy, and Tui. The report was signed by Porter, chairman. I have two committee substitutes on my desk, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the Judiciary Committee substitute for House Bill 39 be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Without objection, the Judiciary Committee substitute will be adopted. Madam Clerk, do you have amendments on your desk?
No, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the Judiciary Committee substitute for House Bill 39 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Without objection, it will be in third reading. Would the clerk please read the title for the third time?
CS for House Bill 39. Judiciary by the House Judiciary Committee, entitled An Act Relating to the Authority of Mobile Intensive Care Paramedics, Physician Assistants, and Emergency Medical Technicians to Pronounce Death Under Certain Circumstances.
Stand briefly at ease, Mr. Majority Leader. Sir. All right. Oh, no, we postponed. Order. We're under debate on committee substitute House Bill 39 Judiciary. Is there debate, Representative Terrio?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Most of you will recognize this bill from one that was introduced last year, made it all the way through the system and just got snagged, as did many other bills in the Senate rules in the closing of the legislature. What the bill does is it allows that physician's assistants and EMTs in very certain specific circumstances can pronounce death. Right now we have a situation where specifically in rural areas of the state, you'll have people that respond to accident scenes and they may be out of contact with their coordinating physician. If they start CPR, they are bound by the Red Cross guidelines to continue CPR until they either deliver the person to an emergency an ER, or a physician or somebody that has the power to declare death relieves them of their duties. That's oftentimes very stressful for them. It can be stressful for family members whose relative is obviously deceased, but they've got EMT people trying to resuscitate them when it's to no avail, and everybody knows it. We've worked with the Department of Health and Social Services, the Alaska Medical Board, to tighten down the language, make it very clear and specific, when they have this power. And I believe that's it. If there are any questions, I could answer them.
Further debate? Representative McLean.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I really strongly support this House Bill 39, and the reason for this is that it is going to save the state dollars. Normally, when you go from rural areas and you're going to perform an autopsy, they have to be shipped to the urban areas for an autopsy, and then they have to be returned back into the rural areas. So this would save the state substantial amount of dollars. I support this bill.
Further debate? Mr. Minority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I just get up just to make the sponsor nervous, but actually I'm getting up to support the bill. Having been an EMT and in the situation that the sponsor spoke about, where you have obvious death that has occurred, Madam Speaker, it does create a lot of traumatic situations for the families and certainly for the primary responders in rural areas of Alaska where they don't have doctors and people at coroners that can pronounce death. It puts them in not only a stressful situation but also a liability situation because clearly EMTs are trained that they don't stop resuscitation efforts until death is declared by a physician. And in a lot of cases, that's just simply not possible. My own personal experience with doing CPR on fishing grounds in a couple of cases, and I spoke about this last year when this bill was on the floor, makes me feel very strongly about this legislation. I think the sponsor has done an excellent job in defining the scope in which CPR can cease and death can be declared by an EMT. And one of my concerns before was about cold water drownings, because in Alaska, new theories and new technological advances have shown that you can revive people that have drowned in cold waters after being underwater for sometimes several hours, and that hypothermia actually preserves the brain and everything else. So that has adequately been dealt with in this legislation, and there is a criteria that's outlined in this bill, if members haven't read it, that clearly allows for the proper situation to occur when this could happen. So this in no way offers up a blank check to EMTs to walk up to an individual and say, yeah, this person is deceased, and not even try resuscitation efforts. There's a half hour in one case and 60 minutes in another, and I think those are extremely adequate. I think the sponsor has done a good job, and I think that we would be doing our EMTs and emergency personnel throughout the state a very good deed by passing this legislation once again this year.
Further debate? Representative Ivan?
I ask for an at ease.
Back to order. Come back to order. Further debate on committee substitute for House Bill 39, Judiciary. If there's no further debate, are you ready for the question? The question being, shall the House adopt the committee substitute for House Bill 39, Judiciary? Would all members please proceed to vote? Would the clerk please lock the roll? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
38 yeas, 0 nays.
And so, committee substitute for House Bill 39, Judiciary, has passed the House. The clerk please read the next item on today's calendar.
House Joint Resolution number 18 by Representatives Cotton Toohey relating to medical savings account legislation. The Health Education and Social Services Committee considered the resolution recommending do pass Roekberg, Bundy, Toohey, Veazey, Robinson. No recommendation, Bryce. A zero fiscal note was attached. The report was signed by Bundy, co-chair. I have one amendment on my desk, Madam Speaker.
Representative Parnell.
Move amendment number one, Madam Speaker.
Without objection, amendment number one is adopted. No further amendments?
No, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Brief at ease, Madam Speaker.
Stand at ease. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that House Joint Resolution number 18 be considered a gross advance to third reading and placed in final passage.
Without objection, House Joint Resolution 18 is under us in third reading. Would the clerk please read the title for the third time?
House Joint Resolution number 18 by Representatives Cotton and Toohey relating to medical savings account legislation.
We're under debate. Is there a debate? Representative Cott.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'm sure many of you remember this measure from last year. My microphone certainly does. It did unanimously pass the House, and it also lingered in the Senate, in the other body's Rules Committee. It's a very simple measure. Each of us are mortal. Each of us will get sick, and each of us will die. And what this particular measure attempts to do is to take care of part of the problem when we get sick. It's better. When all of us get sick, and we certainly all will, we turn to our health care providers to help us out during this time of need. Many of us pay out of pocket, and many of us use insurance to take care of this requirement. It's estimated here in Alaska that somewhere between 17 and 21% of Alaskans are either underinsured or have no insurance at all. And what this measure attempts to do is to ask Congress to change their tax codes that will provide some kind of incentive very similar to what we currently have with individual retirement accounts. In other words, an employer would buy a catastrophic insurance policy for each employee at a reduced cost of what they're currently paying for insurance. The remainder of that money then would be set aside into some form of a employee pool, an individual pool, at which point the employee could then take from it whatever is needed to take care of the small, minor type of requirements as far as health care goes. And that's the gist of the whole bill. We're just asking Congress to be a little more amenable in their considerations and debate concerning changing the tax code. It's my understanding that currently there are six bills in Congress that deal with the medical savings account measure. It is receiving bipartisan support, and I think what they're trying to resolve is which vehicle they're going to use. It's my impression that when this does come to fruition, we will see medical costs either reduced or stabilized. There will be some greater opportunity for the patient to take part in the process, and certainly the administrative costs associated with all the minor type things that we use our insurance for to cover our health care would be eliminated. It's estimated, talking to some of the people that are in the insurance business in this state, that if the state of Alaska used medical insurance accounts for each state employee, the administrative costs alone would be reduced by $7 million. So there is, I think, some substantial savings that could be accrued if we see this form of health care provision adopted by Congress and then passed along to the employers at the various state levels to pursue. So if there are, I'll be happy to answer any questions if anybody has any, but it's a simple measure. It was around last year. It's a recycled bill, I guess you might say. Thank you.
One of the colors. Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, I did have some questions about this resolution. This is not an area of the law that I know a lot about or very much about, but I am very concerned about the availability of health care, and particularly for the people who have no insurance. And this resolution makes the statement on page 2, line 20, that this simple financial mechanism will expand health insurance options to others who presently have no insurance. And it's not immediately apparent to me how that is the case, as the explanation is that we're going to take part of what employers are already paying for insurance and divert part of that. It sounds like a good idea as far as it goes, but I guess a reservation I would have would be, what are we doing about addressing the big picture problem? And many of the issues, it seemed to me that there's efficiencies to be had and many other things that would at least get us to take a very careful look at a major restructuring, more on along the line of a single-payer system than what this approach seems to be. So I'm wondering, does this preclude some bigger solution that would provide health care for everyone? That's my concern with it, is what message are we really sending to Congress here? Are we trying to say we're not for health care reform, we just want to look at this narrow aspect of it and basically dealing with the people who already have some kind of health insurance?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. In essence, this is a form of health care reform. It's not a cure-all. It is not addressing the entire picture of the 17% to 21% that are either underinsured or have no insurance here in the state. This is probably going to address a very small percent, and I would estimate maybe somewhere between 4% to 10%. That's the target group that we're addressing. As far as providing or making some provision or allowance for those who have no insurance to acquire insurance or health care with this type of method, it would cover those individuals who have left a job, who have been job stuck, as many refer to it as, where they, for some reason, opted to move on to a new job. They left their previous position, which provided some form of health insurance. Now they're in transit, in between jobs. We're a very mobile society. The account itself that was established, the employee account, then could be used during that transition period. And generally, it takes between 3 to 6 months, according to labor, before you find another suitable job. That money then could be used to purchase your own insurance policy, health insurance, or it could cover the incidentals, the small incidentals during that period. So this is the stop gap filler, if you will, that we're looking at to cover those small groups of individuals. Again, this is part of a component, I suppose, of health care reform. It is not the cure-all for our health care problems in this state or in the nation. I think it's going to be much wider and broader in nature. But I think what we're sending here is a message to Congress that says, okay, let's do something versus to debate the issue another 2 years.
Shall the House adopt House Joint Resolution Number 18, amended House? Will members please proceed to vote? Would the Sergeant at Arms please void the roll? And may I remind members that while we're in the process of a vote, nobody moves around the floor. The clerk please prepare the board. Would members please proceed to vote? Would the clerk please lock the roll? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
36 yeas, 0 nays.
And so House Joint Resolution Number 18, amended House, has passed the House. Would the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
CS for House Bill Number 58, Resources, by the House Resources Committee, an act establishing the Chicoloon Flats Critical Habitat Area.
This bill, brief at ease. Would the House please come back to order? Now stand briefly at ease. Representative Green.
Madam Speaker, I would request we move back up the calendar for introduction of guests.
Without objection, we are under introduction of guests.
I would like to, with your permission, introduce a constituent and a friend of mine with the Support Industry Alliance in the Paratrovich Gallery, Mr. Chuck Sullivan.
Representative Bundy.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Under the introduction of guests, I also have some constituents in the Paratrovich Gallery who are down here with the Alliance, and I'd like the body to help me welcome Fran Cedar Green, John Wheatley, and Keith Berkeley.
Thank you. Representative Gary Davis.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Also with the Alliance constituents from the representative from District 9 is Mr. Mark Hodgins and Miss Pam Stolzfus. Madam Speaker, and I also notice a friend of mine from Anchorage. I think he's a constituent from District 12, the owner of Columbia Restaurant and Bar Supply, Mr. Roy DeVincenzi.
Further guests for introduction, Representative Cott.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Also in the Paradovich Gallery, down from with the Alliance Sporting Industry, is help me please welcome Dan O'Connell.
Further guests for introduction? That if not, this brings us back to the calendar. In front of us is Committee Substitute for House Bill 58 Resources. It has been read previously for the third time. Is there a debate? Representative Bundy.
Yes, thank you, Madam Speaker. this is our duck bill. As I pointed out before, a bill that was requested by duck hunters and businessmen in Anchorage. As you're well aware, many people all over Alaska are very interested in hunting, and this bill enhances the opportunity to hunt in this particular area, in the Anchorage area. It does not, I'd like to remind the body, constitute a lockup. There are no known mineral or oil and gas reserves in the area, there is no... There is a facility for those resources to be developed and explored if the opportunity should arise in the future. I would simply point out that there are other critical habitat areas in the Cook Inlet area, ranging from Trading Bay, Redoubt Bay, through Susitna Flats. And if my memory serves me correctly, there were 212 requests to enter into those critical habitat areas for various forms of exploration or development. Two of those requests were turned down out of the 212. Those two requests that were turned down were from able-bodied hunters who wanted to use ATV vehicles in the area, and that was determined to be not compatible with the nesting, resting areas of the birds. But 210 requests for development, for exploration, for use of this area, proposals were examined and granted. So I would, again, submit it's certainly not a lockup bill, but simply a bill that improves hunting opportunity in Alaska.
Further debate? Representative McLean.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I consider it a lockup bill. House Bill, Committee Substitute for House Bill number 58, is a lockup bill. And the reason that I would like to say merely for the fact is that remember ANWR.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. In an effort to get my rating from the environmental lobby up to a zero, I would like to ask all the members to vote yes on this bill. There have been adequate precautions placed in this bill that it is not an anti-development bill. It is a statement of our dedication to the preservation of our wildlife. I would urge all the members to vote yes.
Further debate? Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Well, Madam Speaker, if it walks like a duck, talks like a duck, it must be a duck, and this is certainly a duck of a lockup. Last week, I put on record my reason for opposing this bill. It is, pure and simple, a lockup of another 22,000 acres of Alaska's land. Now, I've heard the prime sponsor explain to us over and over that it is for the ducks, but he said it will still allow for oil and gas development. He told the House Special Committee on Oil and Gas last year that oil exploration would not be allowed if it would be disruptive and displace resting birds. To my colleagues who complain about the lockup of Alaska, I say, oppose this bill. It is a We already have 1,400,000 acres of land in critical habitat in this state today. This is more land than is contained within the boundaries of Rhode Island and Delaware. The Department of Fish and Game didn't ask for this designation. There was no other group other than the bird hunters that asked for this designation. The rich Anchorage businessmen who can go duck hunting, shoot the poor little things as they fly along. Madam Speaker, there have been no permits requested, no development is planned, so there is truly no other reason for locking up this land than for the killing of birds. I think this sends the wrong message to the mining industry who opposes this bill. I think it sends the wrong message to all of the oil industry who works to secure the opening of ANWR and other locked-up lands. Madam Speaker, I again ask the members of this body to oppose this bill.
Further debate? Representative Foster?
Thank you. I just wanted to reiterate, I do appreciate the intent of the sponsor, and I don't question, commend him for his intent, but I do feel, like the previous speakers, that the lockup, not only of the 22,000 acres, but also of the 100,000 acres surrounding it, which is used by environmental groups to keep exploration and development and jobs and economy out of a certain district. I think that the area is magnified and compounded, and I think we're just going to have problems with this in the years to come.
Further debate, Mr. Minority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I have to oppose this also, and it's, you know, no disrespect to the ducks or anything, and I know that the sponsor of this bill has very good intentions. You know, I'm sure that his constituents, you know, would like to see that. Thank you very much. And however, Madam Speaker, on a more serious note, the reason I have to vote no is I've seen what's happened here in Southeast Alaska in the timber industry when there has been habitat set asides and well, you can always consider that there may be some timber development or maybe the Forest Service would rethink its position or you hear those kinds of things when habitat areas are being locked up, but there's not too many of them that are ever considered for utilizing those resources. And with the amount of habitat area that's locked up in Southeast, it severely curtailed the timber industry. And I know what we're experiencing down here with those problems has to possibly occur up there. And although I've never been in that particular Chicoloon Flats, I just know that the problem with habitat, not only does it say habitat area, it says critical habitat area. And I think critical habitat area means much more than just habitat area. So I had kind of adopted a personal policy of my own a long time ago, Madam Speaker, just out of disgust from what happened in the early 80s with D2 and with the amount of land that's locked up all across the state. And I see strong statements coming out of this body about lockups and about trying to unlock land in ANWR and other places for our own resource development here in Alaska. I believe if it's truly a duck resting area or landing area or habitat area and there's not any potential mineral development or anything else, obviously there's probably not a lot of trees or anything there. If there's not that there, nobody's going to come in and develop it in the first place. So it would continue in the same state that it's in right now. So I guess this is a more of a philosophical type of a decision for me, just because of all of the mandates according to lockups that have been put on us by the federal government, and a lot of those have been from my own party. And I, you know, don't feel comfortable in us being hypocritical or sending the wrong message by doing this at the same time we're asking the federal government to get off our back.
Further debate? Representative Grusendorf?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Speaker. I look at this piece of legislation a little bit differently. After analyzing exactly what the area was, talking about the tidal flats and the fact that it's basically mud with some resting areas, and looking at its possible uses and then understanding historically what nature has used it for, my conclusion is to support this piece of legislation. And there's a tendency here to be, honing in too narrowly upon the waterfowl, in particular the ducks and I imagine geese, but there's a lot of different species of birds that roll through there. And not only do they rest there before their migratory flight, but many of them even winter there during this time of year. So I don't look at it as a lockup bill as much as I look at it as a flock-up bill.
Further debate? Are you ready for the question? Representative Bundy?
Madam Speaker, if I might just very briefly wrap up. I have had opportunity to discuss this bill with representatives of the oil industry, and I've been led to believe that they're not concerned that this would be labeled a lockup bill. Just to point out that the facts of life in Alaska, certainly in the Anchorage area, 6 or 7 months of a year, this area would be frozen up, and there wouldn't be any resting birds there. We're talking only at the summer, and so if there's a need for exploration, it certainly could occur in the winter months. Regarding the concern about the surrounding areas, this area is surrounded on one side by water and on the other by the Moose Range. There is oil exploration in the Kenai Moose Range. That ought not to be a concern, and if there was, if they can explore for oil in the Moose Range, surely the critical habitat area of Chicoloon is not a detriment to oil exploration.
For the debate, Representative Foster.
One last time, Madam Speaker. I just wanted to say a couple years ago I got a little money to fix a road outside of Nome, and it was discovered by an environmental group that there was a loon that nested 5 miles within the road that I was going to have repaired. And so the project was delayed and then finally dropped, and I lost the ability to fix that road because of that loon that was adjacent and 5 miles away from that road, and I can't help but think that the same thing was going to happen to a critical habitat area down in that area.
Further debate? Question. You ready for the question? The question being, shall the House adopt a committee substitute for House Bill 58, resource under reconsideration? Will members please proceed to vote? The clerk please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
25 yeas, 13 nays.
And so under reconsideration, committee substitute for House Bill 58, resources, has passed the House. Would the House please stand at ease? The House please come back to order? The clerk please read the next item on today's calendar.
We have citations on the calendar.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that citations on today's calendar be approved.
Without objection, the citations on today's calendar are approved. This brings us down onto unfinished business. Under unfinished business, I would like to make a further bill referral on Senate Bill 55. I am going to at this time give it a Finance Committee referral. Further unfinished business, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that members go into the limbo file in order that we may consider the Senate amendments to committee substitutes for House Concurrent Resolution Number 1, Finance, creating a long-range planning commission.
Without objection, we are in the limbo file. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I have checked with the co-chairman of the Finance Committee, and he has expressed no opposition to the changes made by the amendments. I'd like to explain briefly what those changes are. On page 2, line 10, there's added language to ensure that the two members of the House appointed by the Speaker shall be one member of the majority and one member of the minority. On page 2, line 13, there's added language to ensure that the two members of the Senate appointed by the President shall consist of one member of the majority and one member of the minority. On page 2, line 21 and 22, there's language deleted. The language that's deleted is that further resolve that the Commission may hire staff to carry out its duties and be it. That language is deleted. And on page 3, line 5 through 7, the following verbiage is added, and I'll quote, the reductions identified and prioritized under this paragraph must at least equal the current fiscal gap between recurring revenue and recurring expenditures. With that, Madam Speaker, I move that the House concur in the Senate amendments to committee substitute for House Concurrent Resolution Number 1, Finance, thus adopting Senate committee substitute for House Concurrent Resolution Number 1, State Affairs, as amended by the Senate, and I urge the members to vote yes.
Would the members please stand at ease before we have the vote, Mr. Majority Leader? Majority Leader?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. If I may clarify the Senate amendments, I did leave out one item. On page 2, line 6 and 7 and 8, the Senate amendments have changed it from a unanimous appointment of the committee consisting of the presiding officers of the House and the Senate and the governor to clarifying that the Speaker of the House will appoint the members from the House, and the President will appoint the members of the Senate, and the Governor will appoint two other individuals.
Is there debate? Representative Navarre?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The other change is that instead of being unanimous for the 9 public members...
That's just what he read.
No, that's not what he said. It's close. Instead of the 9 public members, there's three that are appointed by the President of the Senate, three that are appointed by the Speaker of the House, and three by the Governor. He mentioned the 2 House members, the 2 Senate members, and then 2 additional members.
Representative Navarre, he just clarified and read.
Well, it wasn't a clarification the way that he stated it. I know it was an attempt at a clarification, and I appreciate
that. Mr. Majority Leader, would you please read again?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I did make a mistake, Madam Speaker. I said 2, and it is 3. And these are not the members of the legislature. These are members of the public, but 3 appointed by the Senate and 3 appointed by the Speaker of the House and 3 by the Governor. And I'll read the entire verbiage if the members
please
like.
Please do.
The Senate committee substitute reads as follows on page 2, lines 6 through 8, which is a substitute for what was on page 2, lines 6 through 8. The new verbiage is, 9 members of the public, not to include members of the legislative, executive, or judicial branches, the Speaker of the House of Representatives, the President of the Senate, and the Governor shall each appoint 3 of these members.
Is there debate? Representative Brown?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, I don't like these changes that were made in the other body. Starting with the composition of the commission, the compromise that we worked out in committee on our side, I think, would lead us more in a direction of a consensus. I'm concerned that the balance that we had tried to achieve is going to be disrupted just because of the particular parties that control the appointments. And I think that having them all done by unanimous agreement would lead the appointing authorities, that being yourself and the president and the governor, to find middle-of-the-road individuals who would have a broad, hopefully broad view of the public interest, and by just having it be at the discretion of one individual, I think that's much less likely to occur, that we would end up with that broad, those people that have a broad consensus-oriented viewpoint. Secondly, removing the authority to hire staff, I believe, will make it less likely that the commission could function in an independent manner and could, and I think they will be now totally dependent on the legislative and executive existing staff, which may or may not be adequate to get the job done. I'm particularly troubled by the change made in subsection 4 because it seems to presume what the outcome might be. I'd say, why are we only identifying cuts equal to the size of the gap? Why aren't we identifying new sources of revenue that might be equal to the size of the gap? I think a reasonable expectation is that this group would make a good faith effort to do that, but if there aren't $500 million worth of cuts that they feel they could in good conscience recommend, I would not want to see them feel obligated to do that because of the language that's been added in item 4. And I'm kind of torn about how to vote on it because I want to see something happen. And although this isn't perfect, it's the only thing that seems to be happening in this legislature at the moment. But I think these changes aren't leading us in the direction that we need to be going.
Further debate? Are you ready for the question? The question being, shall the House concur with the Senate amendments? Committee substitute for House concurrent resolution number 1, State Affairs. Would members please proceed to vote? Would the clerk please lock the roll? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
30 yeas, 8 nays.
And so the House has concurred in the Senate amendments on committee substitute for House concurrent resolution number 1, State Affairs. there further unfinished business? Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the following representatives be excused from the call of the House for the following dates. Representative Betty Davis from 6:30 a.m. Plain Time Friday, February 24th until 8:48 p.m. Plain Time Sunday, February 26th. Representative John Davies from 6:40 p.m. Plain Time Friday, February 23rd until 9:35 a.m. Plain Time Monday, February 27th. Representative Kelly from 9 o'clock a.m. Friday, February 24th until 7 o'clock p.m. Plain Time Sunday, February 26th. Representative McLean from 6:55 p.m. Thursday, February 23rd until 8:45 p.m. Plain Time Sunday, February 26th. Representative Phillips from 9:45 a.m. Friday, February 24th until 8:48 p.m. Plain Time Sunday, February 26th. Representative Terrio from 6 o'clock p.m. Sunday, February 26th until 9 o'clock a.m. Plain Time Monday, February 27th. Thank you.
Without objection, the following members will be excused from the House on the call, from the call of the House on those days. Do we have any further unfinished business? Do we have any committee announcements? Representative Bryce?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I would like to announce or let everybody know and invite everybody to the Children's Caucus today at noon. We'll have a couple of speakers. First of all, the Alaska Head Start directors will be in talking about Head Start's future. And we'll also have some folks over from the Division of Public Health and EMS also talking about injury prevention plans for children. So it should be very informative, and I'd appreciate seeing them, folks.
Further committee announcements? General announcement, Representative Mulder?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The Corrections Budget Subcommittee will be meeting tomorrow morning, 8:30, in room 408.
Representative Porter?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The Judiciary Committee will be meeting today at 1 o'clock to hear HB 138, Informant Reliability in the Crime Stoppers Program, HB 52, DNA Evidence in Civil and Criminal Trials, and HB 108, the Use of Permanent Fund Dividends to Recover Welfare Overpayments.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I would like to announce that we will have a technical session tomorrow and that our next regular session will be held on Monday at 11 a.m.
Representative Cott.
Speaker, I just wanted to announce this afternoon, 3 o'clock, Labor and Commerce will be meeting. And we'll be taking up four bills, SB 55, repealing the sunset of enhanced 911 system, HCR 3, workers' compensation pamphlet errors, HB 65, assistive technology loan guarantees, and HB 147, sport fishing, marketing council, and a surcharge. Thank you.
Further committee announcements? Any Representative Ivan?
Yes, please.
Brief at ease. Mr. Minority Leader. Further committee announcements? Any general announcements? This brings us down to special orders. Representative Nicolai.
Good morning, Madam Speaker. Permission to speak on update of Yukon Quest.
Good.
Passing through mile 101 gas station this morning at 5:30 was Jim Wilson from District 37 Ambler. And number two out of there was Jay Cadzo from Fort Yukon from my district at 6 o'clock a.m. And third was Frank Turner from the Yukon Territories at 6:30. Corey Gimman from Dawson at 7:19. And Cowboy Smith was unofficially reported staked atop the Eagle Summit. And into Central was Tim Maury at 7:28 a.m. And they have one mountain left. They're 100 miles from the finish line. And they do have a mandatory 8-hour stop at Angel Creek, which is their next checkpoint. And my prediction is that they'll finish early Thursday morning. Thank you.
Thank you. Further special orders, Representative Davies.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Just very briefly, I request permission to speak on committee schedules.
Without objection, you have the floor.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I know that I've spoken with you about it, but I just wanted to mention that I've been finding it difficult to meet all the schedules that committees that I'm assigned to, and I would appreciate some consideration and help with not scheduling special committees and finance subcommittees on top of regular standing committee meeting schedules. I think it's important for both the people that are coming down to testify as well as ourselves to be able to hear all of the testimonies being presented. And so I would certainly appreciate you and your committee chair persons trying to work harder on the schedule. I don't mind meeting at night, whatever is required, but it's very difficult to try to meet my responsibilities when these conflicts arise. Thank you.
Thank you. Further special orders, Mr. Majority Leader?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Request the special privilege of the floor to speak on the legislative exchange with Yukon Territories.
Without objection, you have the floor.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. A number of us just returned from a legislative exchange to Whitehorse with the Yukon Legislative Assembly, and I'd just like to share a few of the things we picked up. I think it's very important to understand that our neighbors in the Yukon are very interested in developing their economy, and they see their economy tied very closely to ours, and rightfully so. So they're very concerned and very sincere about working with us to develop, as they say it, the economy north of 60. And there's a number of interesting developments that are going on. One of the most notable is the timber industry. Because of events in the Pacific Northwest of the United States and in British Columbia, timber stumpage has become a premium commodity. The Yukon has seen a tenfold increase in the amount of logging in the Yukon. They expect that to increase at least double, if not four or fivefold, in the next couple of years. As a way of example, the typical negotiated timber sale through the normal federal procedures in the Yukon, timber on the stump has been selling for 20 cents a cubic meter, or approximately 75 cents a 1,000 board feet. At auction, that price recently went to $60 a cubic meter. That's an increase of about 2,400%. The folks in the Yukon are working with their federal counterparts to negotiate a treaty involving a salmon that originate in the Yukon River drainage system. Approximately 50%, I believe, of the salmon that return up the Yukon River spawn in the Yukon territories. This is an area that I think we need to follow because it affects a great deal of the Alaskan fishery. Currently, about 90% of the fish caught from the Yukon drainage are caught by Alaskans or Americans. They're very interested in working with us on tourism development. I don't think I need to elaborate on that too much, but they participate with the Alaska Tourism and Marketing Council, and they're also a member of the Alaska State or the Alaska Chamber of Commerce. So there's a lot of interrelationship going on there. I think that we have a lot to learn by looking at their healthcare system. The Yukon Territory is a community of 32,000 people. They have a territorial budget of $500 million. Their health care budget is $55 million, or approximately $1,800 per capita. It is a tremendous expense on their budget, and they are spending a considerable amount of effort trying to manage their health care costs. They are doing this in a number of ways, some of which are very creative and some of which I think can only be characterized by our standards as draconian. But nonetheless, they're wrestling with very difficult problems, and we could learn a lot by seeing some of the exercises they've had to go through rather than trying to learn it all from scratch ourselves. And I'd also comment some other areas, and I may leave something out. They are very interested in developing their mining resources. The big lead-tin-zinc mine at Faro, which I believe was the world's largest prior to the opening of Red Dog, closed down a couple of years ago, and with it, the White Pass Yukon Railroad closed down. They are taking steps at this time to open the Faro mine. It is anticipated to open in August of this year. One of the things that is very contingent upon is the Yukon Territories is virtually a landlocked territory. Their only coastal area is on the Arctic coast, and they use the Port of Skagway and the Port of Haines to get to tidewater. The last 15 miles of the Skagway or Klondike Road is in American territory, and this literally is the summit of White Pass is the boundary. Without cooperation from Alaskan counterparts, this road cannot be maintained, and in order for a mining operation at Faro to be feasible, they have to have virtually 24-hour open road access. The plans are that at any one time there will be 40 trucks on the road between Faro and Skagway. That's constantly 24 hours a day. In the past, there has been some joint cooperation between the Canadian federal government and the United States federal government over waivers or cooperation on Canadian citizens and American citizens working together on this. Obviously, the logical way to approach this problem is for the maintenance crews to start on the Yukon side of the pass and work downhill rather than starting at Skagway and trying to clear the pass working up. But this is one of the many problems which Alaska has a very viable stake in, because the wharfage fees alone that would be generated by the Farrell mine amount to in excess of $2 million a year. So we have a very big concern there. Anyway, I won't go on. We spent two very busy days meeting with those officials, and they were very gracious hosts, and I look forward to hosting them next year.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Leader, and thanks to all the legislative members who did attend that legislative trip. Representative Martin?
Brief at ease.
At ease. No. Further special orders? If there are no further special orders, Mr. Majority Leader?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent the House stand in adjournment until noon tomorrow, Thursday, February 23rd.
For a technical session only, and Mr. Minority Leader, would you please put that on your calendar? Thanks. We are adjourned until 12 noon Thursday for a technical session.